My guest on It's Your Community this morning, Joe Kane, who is the executive director of the Nisqually Land Trust. Welcome to It's Your Community, Joe.
Thanks, Dick. It's great to be here.
And you're here partly because of our morning guy, Ty Flint, who is friends with a member of your board, Mary Gentry.
So Mary Gentry's our vice president.
And I called Mary, and she says, you don't want me on the program, you want Joe Kane.
What Mary says, Joe does. So.
And someday I'll get Mary on the program. She's a cool person.
She is a pillar of this community.
She certainly is. I've had Nisqually Land Trust folks on before in the past, but it's been a while. You do great things for our community. Describe
Thanks.
What you do exactly.
Sure. We're a private nonprofit conservation organization. We've been around for 28 years, and we protect wildlife habitat mainly by purchasing it and restoring it between Mount Rainier National Park and the Billy Frank Jr. Nisqually National Wildlife Refuge.
Okay, so you're limited to, well, Nisqually is your name.
Nisqually
so you,
watershed.
So you follow the Nisqually River all the way to Mount Rainier. Is that how that works?
That's right, the entire Nisqually watershed. So the watershed is defined by every drop of water that falls into the Nisqually watershed is within our service area.
So if there's a little creek that runs 50 miles a different direction from the Nisqually River, you follow that too?
Absolutely. A good example is the Michelle River, which a lot of people know because it goes right through Eatonville. That's the largest tributary to the Nisqually River. And the main headwaters and longest tributary to the Michelle River is a creek called Busy Wild Creek that goes almost up to Mount Rainier National Park and is of particular importance because the Michelle River and Busy Wild Creek are federal critical habitat for steelhead trout, which are a salmonid species and are listed under the Endangered Species Act and are extremely close to extinction.
So, Joe, how many of these tributaries have you actually visited?
There are a lot of tributaries in the Nisqually watershed. I've visited most of the ones that are what we call anadromous. In other words, that are salmon spawning tributaries, that salmon come up from the ocean through the sound and up into the freshwater system. So we have a series of tributaries up the main stem of the Nisqually River, and then we have the Michelle subbasin, as we call it. There's only one tributary, Busy Wild, which is actually salmon spawning, but there are probably 20 different tributaries in the Michelle, but only one is open. In other words, unblocked.
Now, are some of these so small you can walk across
them? Sure, absolutely. Yeah. And depending on the time of the year, some of them aren't even there. Especially in 2015, which was a drought year, we saw a lot of our upper watershed come close to drying up because we had nothing coming down in the way of rainfall in the winter, and we had very little snowpack.
But it's still considered part of the Nisqually Land Trust, shall we say, territory.
Our service area.
So what you do is you buy up the land instead of just condemning it, so to speak. That's not a good word, but you buy it.
We buy key pieces of high-priority habitat. When I say high-priority, in the salmon areas, and the Nisqually Salmon Recovery Plan is managed by the Nisqually Indian Tribe. They're what's called the lead entity for salmon recovery in the Nisqually watershed. And our role as a private nonprofit partner is to be the habitat acquisition wing. And we take the highest priority properties for salmon recovery in the anadromous zone and then for things like marbled murrelet and spotted owl recovery up near the national park. And we try to connect blocks of already protected habitat. We've got multiple partners in the Nisqually watershed in our state, county, federal. And our job is to connect the key habitat and build big blocks of habitat. And then to do that in a way, we believe you can only have permanent conservation. We're here in perpetuity if you have healthy local economies and healthy local cultures. So we try to team with our local municipalities to make salmon habitat projects, for example, also recreation or trail projects that'll bring people into towns like Eatonville or towns like Elm and, you know, bring some money with them, help the local economy. That's how we build support for conservation.
So do you build trails?
We have trails on our properties. We don't build trails, but I'll give you an example in Eatonville. And this is a big success story. If you go to Eatonville, there's a trail now called the Bud Blanchard Trail. There is a beautiful pedestrian bike and horse bridge across the Michelle River, the first such bridge that's ever been across the Michelle. It was put in 3 years ago, and it connected properties that we worked the town of Eatonville to buy along the Michelle River and connects downtown Eatonville with Pack Forest and over 40 miles of hiking, biking, and recreation trails. That has now become the biggest attraction in Eatonville right away, and it's called the Bud Blanchard Trail. Eatonville built the short trail in the town of Eatonville, but it connected it to an existing trail system that was already in place and opened it up much more widely to the public.
Now, trails are wonderful, and of course, I'm sure you want more of them, and we all want more of them, but essentially your goal is just to keep the land wild, right?
That's right, to keep it the high-priority habitat, to restore it to its highest level of ecological health. So half of what we do is restoration. Last year, we planted in there 200 150,000th native plant on our properties. And we do big habitat restoration projects. If you go through the Ohab Valley, Ohab Creek is the second largest tributary to the Nisqually, also highly critical for salmon recovery, both steelhead and Chinook, king salmon, which are also listed under the Endangered Species Act. And Dick, I should point out that we are down to spawning adult populations of steelhead and Chinook of 200 to 300 fish each year. We are within an eye's blink of losing both of those species. So every foot of habitat is critical. In the Ohop Valley, we did a 400-acre floodplain restoration and completely restored the creek. It had been ditched 150 years ago. It just turned into a fire hose. Salmon couldn't get up it to spawn. We completely took the ditch apart and rebuilt it, turned 1.6 miles into 2.4 miles of meandering the original creek, and then planted 200,000 trees just in that floodplain alone. And we did that with multiple partners, the tribe, South Puget Sound Salmon Enhancement Group, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, Pierce County Conservation Futures, Pierce County Conservation District, and local private landowners.
If you just tuned in, my guest, Joe Kane, the executive director of the Nisqually Land Trust. Joe, you planted 200 and some thousand trees?
We planted 250,000 native plants on our properties as part of our restoration work.
Takes a lot of volunteers or somebody's to plant those.
It takes a lot of volunteers. We get over 400 volunteers out every year. They put in over 4,000 volunteer hours in 2016 alone. Then we also work with professionals like the Nisqually Indian Tribe's restoration crew, which is a highly accomplished technical crew that gets out and plants and replants and does the hard work that we can't get volunteers to in restoration projects.
Joe, how many acres does the Nisqually Land Trust own right now?
We own just shy of 6,000 acres. There's 28 land trusts in the state of Washington. I was a founder and vice president of the Washington Association of Land Trusts, which is our umbrella organization for the land trusts. And we're a somewhat unusual land trust in that we prioritize actually buying and owning the land because that enables us to most efficiently restore it. Many land trusts work with what's called conservation easements, and a lot of people have heard that term, and we have a few. That's where the land remains with the private landowner, but then development rights, for example, are purchased off that land. So for a farmer, for example, might want to keep farming but needs money and will sell the development rights to his property. And then he gets cash to keep going. He agrees never to build houses on the property. We do a few of those, but mostly we buy the land outright. It's shoreline land, and we want to be able to restore that salmon habitat to its highest level of productivity.
I have a mental picture of 6,000 acres. That's a lot of land, but all kind of narrow, I would assume, sort of right near the river and the tributaries.
Not entirely. About half our land is exactly what you've described. If you're up in Ashford, right, the gateway community to Mountain Rainier National Park, and we started back in 2008, working with the local community there to start to acquire timberlands. Particularly if you drive through Ashford, the main entrance into Mount Rainier National Park, and you look up above to the north, to your left if you're going into the park, the whole slope behind Ashford was in private timber ownership, big commercial timber ownership, at various stages was going to be harvested, cut. And the very first stage, the local community came to us and said, you know, our economy is built on recreation and tourism. If this area is clear cut right where you can see it from town, we can't put heads in beds. How can you help? And so we went in and talked to the timber company that was going to do the first big harvest in there, and they said, look, we'll sell. You can raise the money. We'll sell you this land. So we did. We bought 200 acres to start for, I think it was $1 million, and in the subsequent, it's almost 10 years now, we just closed on another 600 acres last year. We've now picked up a total of about 2,500 acres up there for about $13 million, and that's maintained as wildlife habitat and also view shed to help support the local economy.
Now you're talking big money. Where do you get it all?
Dick, I want you to reach deep into your right rear pocket, and if you find a leather wallet there, then open it. We do it two ways. The acquisition money tends to come through grants at either the local, state, or federal level, and usually a combination of all three. That's the typical way to work, and we've done a lot of our acquisition funding. We've raised it that way. Our operations funding, which is what keeps the lights on, the computers running, keeps me going after those grants, that's donations. We have fundraisers. We have a big annual auction. We have an annual appeal. We have a growing list of supporters. Over the last 2 years, as the Nisqually Land Trust, we assign ourselves a job of being not just protectors of that habitat and restorers, but also to be conservation innovators. And one of our big coups, it was a huge high-risk effort for us, but we said we are in the place to take this, is 2016, we completed what's called the first carbon credit sale in the Pacific Northwest. We sold 38,000 carbon credits to Microsoft. In fact, the first conservation deal Microsoft has ever done in North America. Now, what that is our land up there in Ashford that I was just talking about. We have a portion of that that has a lot of timber on it that could be cut and commercially converted. regulated, we were able to determine through a highly regulated process, actually in the state of California, of all places, that that land is sequestering carbon. It is taking carbon out of the air, right? So fighting climate change, it is taking carbon out of the air and storing it underground in its roots. That's carbon sequestration. We were then given credit for the amount of carbon that those trees were holding. And those credits, in turn, have a price on the market. And on the California regulated market, businesses in California are required to reduce their carbon pollution steadily over time. 90% of that they have to do on site, but 10% they can do by preserving trees in places outside of California. So we took our land and had it measured. We had some money we had received in a bequest from someone who had died. We risked it. We decided we were going to risk a certain amount of it because we thought we could quadruple it if we had a successful project, and it's all or nothing. So we went through this two-year process. We had an incredible amount of work done on the ground measuring these trees, and at the end of the day, we had carbon there, and we did. We had four times as much money in the carbon as the money we put in to develop the project. Microsoft stepped in and said, wow, Microsoft sequesters carbon all over the globe, the Amazon, Madagascar, Africa. They said, wow, this is a project right in our backyard that our people can go out and walk around on. We would love to do that. So we sold them all of our carbon credits, and now we were heading for our second carbon project, and it was the first such carbon project ever completed in the Pacific Northwest. And what it does is it provides, among other things, an upfront piece of cash, but also as those trees continue to grow, they develop more credits. We sell those credits, and we have money to take care of that land in perpetuity.
Joe, you explained that better than anybody has ever explained that to me before. Now I sort of understand it a little bit, carbon credits. Joe, we've run out of time, and it's been very interesting having you on the program, and you are with the Nisqually Land Trust. I know there are others. The best way to get a hold of you is how?
NisquallyLandTrust.org. It's our website.
All right. Joe Kane, Executive Director of the Nisqually Land Trust, thank you so much for being on the program.
Thanks, Dick. It's been an honor and a pleasure.
Coming up next on It's Your Community, a visit with the new director of Safe Place, Sarah Lloyd. Stay tuned.